I'm Alex Marlowe, Editor-in-Chief of Breitbart News, and this is the Breitbart News Daily Podcast. We begin the show, inevitably, talking about all the details of the potential arrest of Donald Trump, which could happen this week over, I guess, hush money payments to porn star Stormy Daniels. Seems kind of odd, and yet seems kind of the opposite of odd in some ways. We give you all the details and what to expect and what are the open questions in the opening of the show before we get into other news. Mike Cernovich is our guest today, very popular on Twitter and Substack and Instagram, very provocative guy and thoughtful, so always has an interesting take on the news. We discuss, of course, what's going on with Trump, as well as the unearthed January the 6th footage and more in that portion of the broadcast. Let's get into it. Was a bit of news over the weekend. I hope all of you had a nice weekend. And mine was mildly interrupted by the news, I have to say. And I don't like that. And I've gotten pretty numb to breaking news, letting it ruin my mood. But I have to say, I was a little affected by the big news that Donald Trump saying he will be arrested on Tuesday amid a Manhattan DA probe. And he called for protest. He released a truth bomb. My term for when he does tweets on social media, Truth Social. Here it is. Illegal leaks from a corrupt and highly political Manhattan District Attorney office, which has allowed new records to be set in violent crime and whose leader is funded by George Soros, indicate that, with no crime being able to be proven, and based on an old and fully debunked by numerous other prosecutors' fairy tale, the far and away leading Republican candidate and former president of the United States of America will be arrested on Tuesday of next week. Protest. Take back our nation. I'm the Soros-funded DA he's referring to as Alvin Bragg, and that's not inaccurate. And the popular candidate who is a former POTUS is him. So that's what Trump says is going to happen. And why is it? Why would he be getting arrested? It's part of a hush money payment to Stormy Daniels. I saw a tweet online I thought was kind of funny, which is actually romantic that he paid off the porn star Stormy Daniels so that Melania wouldn't find out about whatever interaction they had with one another. It's unclear what the criminal charges would be. And we don't know exactly what Trump is being accused of specifically, but we do know that what has been rumored is that there was he paid her to be quiet about some stuff, and that might be tied into campaign funding and financing. Michael Cohen, the Trump's former personal attorney turned social media figure who complains about Trump like so many others. Said he was pressured to make a $130,000 hush money payment on behalf of Trump ahead of the 2016 presidential race. Cohen got 3 years in prison after pleading guilty to numerous crimes, including tax evasion, as you guys might recall from 2018. And one of the other things that he was accused of was arranging payments to silence women and misleading Congress about their businesses with Russia in the past. So a year to serve for that. Needless to say, the right rallied very quickly to Trump's side. That should not be a surprise to anyone. Kevin McCarthy saying, here we go again, an outrageous abuse of power by a radical DA who lets violent criminals walk as he pursues political vengeance against President Trump. I'm directing relevant committees to independently investigate if federal funds are being used to subvert our democracy. J.D. Vance noted that Alvin Bragg is bought by Soros. He allows violent criminals to walk the streets of New York, but he will prosecute the likely Republican nominee and former president on a baseless misdemeanor charge. These people are trying to turn America into a third world country. All that's true, he continued from there. Lee Zeldin, Alvin Bragg may very well be the most dangerous, divisive, incompetent, and compromised district attorney in America. On day one, my first action as governor would have been to tell Bragg he was fired. It is true he's backed by Soros. And this is one of those, part of that project that I've written about and I've talked about on the broadcast over and over again, how Soros has bought, I think, some 75 DA seats. Because these races, you fund them enough, the Soros-backed candidate will win. And Republicans are always behind when it comes to strategy. So Soros was out there, and he backed Bragg, and now this is what Bragg is doing this time. So what he is doing is ignoring things like violence against police officers, violence in the streets, homelessness, drugs, etc. The main name of the game is to try to get Trump. So my hot take, and this does fit my pattern, the pattern I've warned about since the January the 6th committee, which is that this is designed to maximize the likelihood Donald Trump becomes the Republican nominee and minimize the likelihood that he gets elected in general election. I think that this type of stuff is, if he does get arrested, I think that it will rally any really motivated, somewhat emotionally invested conservative to Trump's side, make it more likely you're going to vote for him in a primary race. But then once he shows up in a general race, then I think it'll have a toxifying effect for a lot of moderate people. That they're just too much. We've spent too much time on this guy. We've dedicated too much of the country, too much of our lives. I think a lot of people are going to tune out. This is exactly what I thought they were going for January the 6th. I thought that that was their main intention. And it seems to be working because Trump is you know, dominating nearly every primary poll at this point. And, you know, Ron DeSantis is the only one who is reasonably within striking distance. And DeSantis is as wonderful as a governor as he is, seems to be a kind of lousy presidential candidate thus far. Part of it is DeSantis has not weighed in on this at all. He's like the only conservative out there who has not said, hey, this is bad. It's so clearly political. Obviously, this is a political prosecution. I mean, do I even need to make that point? Jonathan Turley, who is a famed attorney, George Washington University law professor, not a man of the right, but has gotten a big following on the right because he tells it like it is. He said that this is a pathetic, legally pathetic, is how he worded this. So he's been highly critical of this case. He says a flawed case. It's based on a state charge effectively prosecuting the federal election violation. The federal case was rejected by the Justice Department. There are also statute of limitation questions that could come into play. Bragg may be able to expect highly motivated judges and jurors in New York. However, the novelty and question in this case would present difficult appellate issues for the prosecution, which means that the design is to harass Trump. The design is not to actually win. He thinks it's a lousy case. But he does think that it could be an avenue just to harass Trump, as they so often do. So, also noteworthy in Trump's tweet is his call to protest and take back our country. I will say definitively to this audience, I know some of you are inclined to protest, I say do not do it. That is a hard and fast opinion. Do not go out and protest. Do you remember the last time you guys protested? Do you remember? I would be stunned. I would be stunned if you forgot the people who are rotting in jail still from the January the 6th protests, which we know from Tucker Carlson footage were mostly peaceful. So 1,000 people, a lot of them held without bail, massive amounts of money fundraised for their legal defense that was not spent. So I don't know. And again, it's not something we talk about because whatever reason, it's unpalatable for people that hundreds of millions of dollars were raised for legal defense for January the 6th and they were not deployed. So I have no idea why you would go out there and risk your lives to protest at this point. There is a lot that needs to be done, but that's not the move. It's not the move. Unless you want to risk going to jail for no reason and then not having the legal system work in your favor, which it doesn't do anymore. The legal system is highly politicized. Case in point, the former president might get arrested for dubious charges for a alleged hush money payment of a relatively small amount to a porn star almost a decade ago, which is a joke. It's a joke. I'm torn about being upset, outraged, and laughing. I think all of them are valid. And I do want your opinion on this, where you shake out, where you come down, what your reactions were. Did it bum you out? This all bummed me out. I mean, this is so beneath us as a country, or at least I thought it was. And then it dawns on you, maybe it's not beneath us. Maybe this is just where America's going. Maybe this is just what America's up to. That we think that the most important thing to do is to use what any means necessary to vanquish political foes. Even if we look like goofballs while we do it, like Alvin Bragg does. So Bragg responded, "We do not tolerate attempts to intimidate our office and threaten the rule of law in New York." I think anyone's trying to intimidate him. They just Trump wants people on his side. To go through what Trump does, the hatred that he endures, there's no way he could continue to do it unless he knew that there were so many people who were beside him and will fight with him. In this case, I hope, figuratively speaking. But anyone who is suggesting that Bragg should be on violent crime is correct. Anyone who is suggesting that this is third world stuff is correct. And those who are suggesting that this means Trump will win re-election are, I think, premature. I think this would kind of lock up a primary unless something wild happens for Trump. I don't know... realistically, if they're actually like put handcuffs on and bring him to prison. This is a impossible scenario. It's an impossible scenario for people who support Trump because you're sort of powerless in the face of a corrupt judicial system. What is the recourse? And this is where I want some of you to weigh in, and I want to get your take on how to do it. Andy McCarthy writes at National Review on Fox and is generally a Trump hater. Says this is a nonsense case against Trump. It's a blatantly partisan exercise of raw power. Exactly. Alvin Bragg is not an appointed law enforcement official entrusted with upholding the Constitution like a prosecutor or attorney general in the federal system. He's an elected Democrat. In state systems, prosecutors and state attorneys general are enmeshed in partisan politics. That's how they get their jobs. He wrote National Review. It's a good point. Indicting Donald Trump on a nonsense case is a blatantly partisan exercise of raw power against Democrats' arch nemesis, and it's good politics. That's right. That's all it is. So then what's next? People will rally to Trump's side. They will show him some support. And then what will they do after that? Vote for Trump, I presume. But then how does this leave us all in the general election? Where does America stand if this happens? Where do moderate Democrats stand? Or do they tune out, or do they realize, okay, I get it now. The Democrats are a corrupt institution and I can't support them anymore. Hollywood celebrities were freaking out. F this guy, common refrain about Trump. I was from Seinfeld scribe Larry Charles. Donald Trump's a sociopath and a criminal, Stephen King. The last time he did this, he and his supporters attempted a coup, 2 and a Half Men star John Cryer said. I think this is in reaction to the calls for protest. This goes on. I don't need to read them. They're on the front page of Breitbart. But that's pretty common. And the right, uniformly supportive, aside from DeSantis didn't weigh in at all, which is very odd. Marjorie Taylor Greene, this is what they do in communist countries. Vivek Ramaswamy, Trump indictment would be a national disaster. Mike Pence, who was on Boyle's show on Saturday, Breitbart News Saturday, this reeks of the kind of political prosecution that we endured back in the days of the Russia hoax. Probably worse, because they didn't arrest him during the Russia hoax. McCarthy orders immediate investigation. I read that point. So I want your thoughts. I want to know, are you disturbed by all this? How disturbed? Did you see this coming? Do you think it's real? That's another one I haven't thrown out as an option. I have intel from inside Trump world that it's not going to happen on Tuesday. It might happen on Thursday, but they think it's going to happen. I have no clue if that's true because I don't believe anyone in this scenario. But you have to look at how sort of dumb it would be of the Democrats to try this, because it just will engender more support for Trump and think that Democrat outfit is just purely about politics, not about helping the country. But maybe they have a calculus that is sharper than mine, and maybe they think that this really does serve their base and what they want. All right, 866-95-PATRIOT. If you want to weigh in on that, I'll get some other news items before I bring in some of you on the phones. No doubt talk about that topic. There was a big report out on Hunter Biden receiving payments from a Chinese company, and that amounts to a potential case for bribery and an impeachable offense, perhaps, under the Constitution. And Joe Biden, though, has denied it. So he said it's not true. He does this effortlessly. But Hunter admitted on Thursday the family business does not accept China money in... the family business did accept China money in 2017. So he admitted not only did he receive it, but also James, Haley, and an unknown Biden all received a total of $1.3 million from China. So the a Hunter spokesperson said Hunter received his portion of good faith seed money when he shared with his which he shared with his uncle James in Hallie, not Haley. We have a misspelling. That's annoying to me. Hallie Biden, with whom he involved with at the time and sharing expenses. So Biden says not true, even though Hunter Biden's own spokesman acknowledged it. All right. Yes, that's right. So Joe Biden also said Hunter has never made millions. Hunter has made millions from various different countries. A lot of countries where Joe Biden was in charge of their portfolio. The effortlessness in which Joe Biden lies is beyond belief. I've never seen anything like it in American life. It's sociopathic level. Anyone who pays attention to American politics, whether or not you're a Biden fan or a Biden hater, knows Hunter Biden has made millions of dollars off his dad. And Biden's like, nope, didn't do it. Wasn't him. Not my Hunter, smartest guy I know. Now there is a, Hunter is now suing the Delaware repair shop owner who got the laptop from hell. So there's countersuits. He's suing Hunter and vice versa now. And so Hunter's trying to fight back. This is the tactic that he's taking. We learned over the weekend, I'll bring this up at the end, Gaynor, when he's here, but ABC refused to review the laptop from hell while reporting on it. So even though they finally reported on it, they wouldn't review it, I guess because they thought it was a privacy issue, which is kind of wild. You think if Don Jr. left a laptop, his privacy would have been respected? Seems unlikely to me. Seems unlikely. All right, next thing. Bring up some international stuff. And I'm curious people's thoughts on this as well, is that in France, massive protests going on. Macron's government is in jeopardy because he's unilaterally raising the retirement age, Social Security age. Social Security age there is too low. I think it's 62, and he wanted to raise it legislatively. Yeah, it was 62. And he wanted to raise it 64. Government would not vote for it. So he's doing it on his own. I think the math they have there is that now it is... when their Social Security system was established at 62, there was four workers for every person on Social Security. Now it's down to 1.5, which is a joke. I mean, that's a joke. You can't have a system that was drawn up when there are four earners for every one pay payee. I think payee, is that the expression? And so you can't have a system where then all of a sudden it's 1.5 to 1 and the system's sustainable. It's not sustainable. Now, who's going to be the guinea pig who gets out there and is the one who stands up to it? That's what's interesting. And I, the reason why I bring this up is not just because you're seeing riots and it's an interesting thing, but we're going to have this issue in the United States. And it's one where I think politically it's suicidal for the Republicans to talk about this now. But the Democrats are certainly not going to rein it in because they don't do things that are politically suicidal. So ultimately, a Republican with a lot of political clout should address the cost of Social Security and Medicare right now, because people are living very, very long and we are a very spread thin on our budgets and how much money we spend into these systems. So eventually, we're going to have to raise the rates, the ages where these things kick in here. But when will that be? When will that be, and when do we address it, and who addresses it? Because this is the nature of our politicized world that we're living in, this era, where anytime anyone would bring this up, the media won't view it in good faith. The Democrats will see it as a chance to pounce, and savvy Republicans will note that this is a really bad idea politically, because you start taking away people's benefits, particularly people who are not wealthy, and the political consequences are vast. So Macron's trying it in France, and there is, you know, and now Paris is burning, literally. Paris was warned of rat infestation, 10,000 tons of trash pile up amid strikes. Ooh, disgusting. So just stunning footage. We got our London Bureau, Breitbart. You want to check that out. But a lot of rats, a lot of garbage, and it's because people are upset that their benefits are going to be cut back. But again, what is the math? How do countries pay for things when that's the case? If you just don't have nearly enough to come in to fund the program, then eventually something's got to be done, right? So Macron's trying, and it is he's getting pilloried for it. All right, 866-95-PATRIOT. Quick bank update. First Republic Bank shares crashed despite a $30 billion rescue. This is going to go on. The bank crisis is going to rely on a lot of bailouts, and they still might not solve the problems. We have an FTX update. The FTX is claiming Sam Bankman-Fried plundered $2.2 billion in loans and payments as CEO. Where is it? I'd like to know where all of it is, because he said he's got $100,000 to his name, and then he made a huge bail, $250 million bail, and was flying private. Janet Yellen is choosing which banks are getting the bailouts and which ones are not. This is a big outrage, and I kind of had this in my brain last week, and I didn't really put my finger on it, but this is a really interesting thing, that a lot of these banks that are failing first are going to get bailed out first. And if these banks continue to fail, which is highly possible at this point, then we're also going to see people are going to put their foot down and say no more bailouts. Because we have these laws in the book, which are semi-ridiculous, which is that the FDIC is only insuring deposits up to $250,000. The vast majority of people who have deposits in banks don't have $250,000 in the bank. But a lot of people who do have vast numbers above that. So if you look at Silicon Valley Bank, there's most of the vast majority of their holdings were way above that number. So like most of you in the audience don't have more than $250,000 in a bank account. I certainly don't. But it's the, if you're a client at Silicon Valley Bank, you very well might. So it is, and this goes for a lot of these banks. So if you don't insure them, then we could have a ruinous Lehman Brothers-like financial collapse. So regardless of what's on the books, what's on the books is, yeah, they're not insured. But it, on a practical level, do we let the economy completely tank if more of these banks fail, which is what's going to be on the table? Silicon Valley Bank's UK staff and executive received modest bonuses. You know what they were last year? Tens of millions. So tens of millions for their failing bank because they deserved it, I guess. They could have failed even worse. Nearly half of climate change companies in the U.S. were banked with Silicon Valley Bank. So climate change company is a huge green energy sector. Joe Pollack wrote this for us at Breitbart. It's a pretty good reporting here. Part of my big research projects that I've been working on will have involved going through the radical green grift that's going on in this country. So many hoaxes. So many hoaxes. And one of them is that the environmentalists care deeply about the environment and don't care about creating new avenues for themselves to make a bunch of money in new economic sectors. You know how you get generational wealth? You know how you get explosive wealth? Not just you start a business and then the business goes well, then you franchise it, and maybe you'll make $1 million. Like that was kind of how we thought of business. And every once in a while, someone really breaks out. Some larger than life figure, and you can have some sort of huge steel company. And all of a sudden, you're putting railroad tithes down all across the nation. And then you get some real money. That's how we used to think of it. Now, the way to get billions of dollars is to get a government deal that allows for you to get capital so that you can get in on a new technology sector that doesn't exist yet. That's the way to get generational wealth. The easiest way. I mean, there's other ways, but like, that's the biggest one. So a lot of these people are thinking, well, how do I get a huge wealth? Well, you get on this green thing. The government wants to fund it. They will give us money to do it. And then we convince people via these celebrities that this is an important thing, and hopefully people adapt it. And then now all of a sudden we're billionaires. And this was being tried over and over again in this country right now. And it's part of the reason we've got pushed into these illogical green technologies we're not ready for. Experts have told Congress that the green wind turbines of the Atlantic may impair ship radar and threaten national security. A brilliant story from Frances Martell. I'll bring up with her later in the live show. Experts testifying to Congress about an in-district hearing in Wildwood, New Jersey, warned that a new offshore wind turbine project, which is being subsidized by state and national Democrats, could interfere with radar navigation of the Atlantic, which could be a national security threat, not to mention devastating for wildlife. We were told the Democrats love the whales, right? Well, I love the whales. But there's been a bizarre increase in dead whales washing ashore in New Jersey over the last year. And New Jersey authorities, Francis writes, have documented extra whales coming over their national average or annual average. And we've had 29 dead whales since December, which is like quadruple what you would expect, maybe more. The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration insisted there's no evidence tying the wind development to the whale deaths. Do you believe them? Government-run entity? I don't. Look forward to having Cernovich on. He gets up really early to record the show with us because he's out west. And we get into all things Trump and DeSantis, January the 6th. We even talk about exercise. We talk about the importance of writing if you have the time to do so. So quite a bit in the conversation. Let's hear it. Mike, let me ask you a question about your Substack, which has been really great. It's been a great venue for you. What do you think of it so far? Because I was very hot on the Substackification of journalism and letting sort of the top journalists out there be able to write and interact with their audience without really having to go through huge levels of filters. I always like the raw content that you can get in a format like that. But does it only really favor people who've already built up like a huge audience over years and years and years? Is there any limitations to it? What have you thought since you've been going down this road recently?
Exactly right. Substack would be very hard to do if you were just starting off. It's something that is a great platform, but you have to drive a certain number of people there in order to get subscribers. So I wouldn't discourage people from writing. I'm a fundamental believer in that people, if they want to write and you feel like you're compelled to write, then you should write. And it's going to take a long time to build up an audience on any forum, but that's part of the game. You should enjoy it. If you really enjoy writing, you should write anyway.
Yeah, and it seems like, you know, institutionalizing it is pretty good. I have close friends with one of the most prominent ghostwriters in conservative media, and he says just write 500 words a day no matter what. There's a prominent lawyer who the audience is familiar with. I won't drop the name, but I had a conversation with him recently, and he said he writes 2,000 words a day no matter what. And it's just sort of an interesting thing. If you're inclined to do that, it's a great exercise. I just got through a big writing process, and it's amazing how you can really hone ideas just by going through the process. Even if it's not necessarily going to see the light of day, even you do sharpen your own argumentation versus just conversation or tweets or whatever is your preferred medium. So I do encourage people to try to diversify their communication mediums if they can. And writing is probably the one that demands the most sharpness, I think.
It makes you more reflective, contemplative. It makes walking a lot easier because you have a running dialogue in your own mind. And remember that people used to write letters to the editor. Writing is maybe a dead loss, a dead art form, unfortunately, yeah. A dying art form. People used to write these amazing letters during the Civil War. It reads like a regular soldier on the front lines would write something that today would be hard to be found from a professional writer.
Yeah, interesting. Really interesting. Yeah, and if you look back at some of the Civil War letters, stuff like that, it's very depressing how the vocabulary and the style of people with eighth grade educations far surpasses, I'm sure, your average Harvard graduate today. And it's just a very dark sign. And sometimes you got to think, don't whine about it. Just get engaged yourself, start trying, see where it goes. And you'll probably feel better for it. I don't think there's a downside to doing more writing. But anyway, I could do this for an hour, and I don't want to because I want to ask you about the news. I reached out originally to have you on because I wanted to get your thoughts on the latest January the 6th revelations, where you've done some pretty phenomenal reporting on that. And I want to get your thoughts on what we saw. And then, of course, there's a lot of breaking news over the weekend. I want your take on that as well. But let's start with January the 6th. What did you see in those tapes that Tucker put out? What are lasting questions for you? I do want to get the overall 30,000 foot on where we are in the saga.
Right. When we all watched January 6th unfold, we realized that the following would happen. There was a number of people, maybe 50, maybe 100, some of them real, some of them in beds. That we'll never really know. But there were certainly some bad people who wanted to go in and behave like hooligans, and who deserved some form of prosecution consistent with what people on the left would get, which is a separate conversation altogether. And then we knew that the vast majority of people who went in were just following a wave. If you're at a soccer game or you're at any kind of crowded event, the whole audience gets almost its own pattern, its own vibe, and you can't move out of that. But we always knew that there were going to be people who ended up in the Capitol that were going to be respectful. They were tourists. They remembered that there was the climate protest takeover of the Capitol that Nancy Pelosi endorsed after it had happened. So Nancy Pelosi's office had been taken over by protesters before, by the AOC-led event. And that's when my heart broke on January 6th, because I tweeted out a tweet actually that was very nastily taken out of context. But I said, this is going to be a 9/11 situation. And then people said, oh, you're comparing January 6th to 9/11. And I said, no, I'm comparing the response to 9/11. They're going to start rounding up conservatives in droves. And that's exactly what we've seen. So many innocent people have their lives destroyed, jobs destroyed, families destroyed, neighbors destroyed. They've lost everything. And that I knew was going to happen, and my heart broke. And the videos proved it, that 90% of people who went in were regular, God-fearing, good people, and they're having their lives completely upended as part of the Bolshevik Revolution.
Whatever happened to all that money that was raised for their criminal defense? Was any of that ever deployed, or did that just get gobbled up and swallowed in the deep abyss of political fundraising?
We love to ask that. people are awfully bad whenever.
Oh no, no. Well, we're on radio, Mike, so I get to ask whatever I want, and then it's harder.
Yeah,
to clip
that's a million-dollar question, right? How many hundreds of millions of dollars were raised off of the back of January 6th and off of the back of the event, and then how much made it to anyone? I can tell you that I've done my best. You can only do so much to help get the word out about various January 6th legal defense funds. I've shared links dozens of times, maybe 100 times at this point, including retweets. And these people were not getting there's no money, man. I'm tired of people trying to lie to me and gaslight me otherwise. People are barely getting by. The lawyers who are doing these cases are doing so at a reduced fee, really trying to make ends meet, really trying to cover costs. It's the most mismatched attack that I've ever seen on American civil liberties. Because remember, with 9/11, you have lawyers like Eric Holder representing the 9/11 terrorists. People don't talk about this often enough, how every major law firm in the country lined up to defend the 9/11 terrorists. This included Eric Holder. And now you ask, where are these people? They're nowhere to be found. So you have to wonder, maybe, you know, people like Eric Holder said in a political article, he said it's actually a badge of honor to unrepresent or to represent unpopular people. And I think, well, where are you guys now? Maybe all along you really did support Islamic terrorism, and that's why you were there for the 9/11 hijackers.
It is a remarkable thing to witness something that I think you and I had a similar take on this at the time, though you think delved more deeply into it than I did. Because of the second part of the take, that the whatever was going on, whatever was the intention of January the 6th, Mike, was not... It was never going to be helpful. It was always going to be, it was always understandable, the outrage to me, but I never thought that was a good way of channeling stuff. But it was so clear witnessing what happened that day that it wasn't good, but it was going to be so wildly overblown, and it was going to be held over the entire conservative movement for years to come. It was so clear within hours. And that's exactly how it played out. And according to the footage that we saw, it seems to be even more mild than the media portrayed it. Not to say there wasn't some violence for all the Soros-funded freaks monitoring the show. Of course there was, and I disavow all that. But the question is it, are we going to get smart enough to know when we're walking into a trap? Are we going to know that? And that is a segue to the next conversation, which is what's going on with Trump, saying he's about to get arrested, which is an outrage. Are we going to fall for a trap and do another January the 6th? Is that what's going to happen?
People seem to want to, that's for sure. People seem to want to go protest. I know that the only time Trump organized a protest was January 6th, and then now. So in his when he views it as in his personal interest for people to protest, and he will. But there were no protests. Remember when McConnell was jamming up the Trump agenda, wouldn't build the wall. At that time, I actually suggested protests. And similar to the ones that AOC ultimately organized. I was saying this before AOC was even around, which is, why don't you guys do a protest? There's no wall funding. Nobody was interested in that. But when Trump personally is in the hot seat, then now people are talking about a protest. People are, of course, calling me all sorts of names because I'm saying, how in the world could anyone walk into a Soros DA district? And they said, we have the right to protest. And in a lot of ways, it's like talking to children. It's a very, very frustrating conversation. And as you and I have spoken about privately, it's probably I rarely go anywhere because I can't deal with children and adult bodies. And the idea that you would go to, that, you know, especially when you have kids, you think, I have my own children. I have actual children at home, and they're more mature than you. And people are going to walk into another trap. Now, hopefully, NYPD will do a better job of security. I don't know why anybody after January 6th would go into it. Now the counter argument, people would say, well, that means that protesting for conservatives has been destroyed. And he says, yeah, it was pretty much restored in January 6th. I'm sorry to tell you that. It's heartbreaking. It's wrong. It's immoral. But you have to not protest, or you have to have the protests like they had at the school boards. You have to let the moms do it, keep the drunken men out there, keep the influences all out of there. Keep the people who want to build their brand off of it out of there. And just let the moms do it. That's the way it has to be.
You know, Mike, you know this. You've been on the show enough to know that I try not to. I'm not the conclusions guy. I try to report the news and I try to guide the conversation in a certain direction. But ultimately, it's up to people to find their own conclusions. But I did open the show just saying flat out, do not go out there and protest. Do not do it. It's going to be January the 6th, unless you want to rot in a jail with no bail and then have people raise fundraise off of your plight and not give you any of the money, then don't do it. And, you know, the first or second or third caller, whoever calls in, is just like screaming at the call screener that I'm telling them that they've lost their right to protest. Like, you haven't. I just want to update our tactics. I just want to be smart because we're not winning. And there's a lot of smart people on our side. And there's wealthy people and there's funny people and there's interesting people, and yet we're still not winning. So can we try to move tactics? And I don't know if we can. I don't know if we're disciplined enough or have a clear enough vision. The left is playing for keeps. They never stop playing for keeps. They're literally thinking about arresting Trump over a hush money payment to a porn star almost a decade ago. This is wild stuff. And what are we doing? Are we getting smarter at all? Are we doing anything sharp on the right?
No, especially after the midterms, people point to Trump's hilarious endorsement record, where they say Trump, 99% endorsement record, and I think, well, do you people understand that Trump tried to run Thomas Massie out of the GOP, ran a primary challenger against Massie? Massie, of course, won his race. Now Trump is saying, I endorse Massie. Massie's a winner because of me. Get real. Trump ran a slate of people who ran primarily on the 2020 election, and at least one of them was a great person, Joe Kent. And unfortunately, I think all 8, 9, 10, depending on how you count it, lost. So if you run in the 2020 election, you're going to lose your election. Even J.D. Vance was pretty smart to not make it a focal point of his election in Ohio. In Ohio, he won. But DeWine way outpaced him if you look at the actual margin. So 2020 is a losing issue. We just had an election. Republicans have a narrow, narrow House majority. McCarthy's done a great job. And that's the reality. You have to look at that. And a lot of people, unfortunately, don't care or they don't want to look at the facts, which is, did we just have a primary or a GOP midterm? And then, of course, they say, oh, all the seats that we lose is stolen, right? Every seat that we lose is stolen.
Yeah.
But somehow there's a House majority, so Democrats weren't able to steal all. Some point you just want to say, what are you talking about? Like, really, what are you talking about? You're saying now that the Steelers, whoever these magical people are, the Steelers decided that Republicans could have a House majority, a small one, and but they were just going to steal certain seats to make a point about the 2020 election. I just don't have the patience for it, brother.
I know you don't, but we got to try. And this is something that I try every day because I know that I don't have any connection to Kevin McCarthy. He gives us a lot of exclusives at Breitbart. Most of that is due to Matt Boyle's work with him and working with his shop. He's not been on my show before. And, you know, I've had almost everyone on my show. And I don't have a dog in the fight. But in the run up to the midterm, a lot of people were calling for, they wanted me to get involved, like trying to stop McCarthy. But everything that I've read about him is, I did not believe he was a pure MAGA America First conservative. But everything he's done in the last couple of years indicated to me that he wanted a shot. He wanted to prove to the conservative base that he could do it. And he's basically had A+ marks from me since he's become speaker. And a lot of people who called them were very angry with me in the run-up to the election that I should do more to get in his way, and then are not calling to say, well, he's doing pretty good so far. Like he's doing an amazing job. And you lose your credibility, I think, if you're not willing to say that. And we're getting very tribal now, where it feels like you have to pick a side and then you can stop thinking. This is what the left has done, and they've made it work for them. But I don't think it's going to work for us if we do this. I think we need to be able to analyze certain things in a vacuum, sometimes free of context, and just look at it as objectively. Can you not look at what McCarthy's doing? Tucker Carlson hates McCarthy, and he gives Tucker the January the 6th tapes because it's the biggest platform, because Tucker's done great reporting on that. I mean, these are pretty cool moves here. Can we say it's a good thing, or are people wanting to turn the radio off and put back on Howard Stern or whatever because I'm saying this?
Well, what I find funny is that there was a meme trying to say that DeSantis is such an establishment person, and they use McCarthy as an example, but then Trump endorses McCarthy for Speaker of the House, even, of course, before McCarthy made the concessions, and no one wants to say that. So the interesting phenomenon politically is, let's take someone like McCarthy. A lot of people, as you know, you meet in D.C., they don't necessarily have super strong views on a lot of issues, and they're open to persuasion. And I think McCarthy got better because he listened to people and thought, okay, I'm open to persuasion on issues. I'm the same way. Like, I used to believe different issues, and then people impress themselves on you and think that you made a good point. So McCarthy has been a spectacular speaker, 10 out of 10. I'm sure he's done things that I don't like, but I'll get over it fast because he's in this movement, there's a problem I think a lot of people have, which is this. Trump brought in a lot of new first-time people. It's amazing. That's his singular most highest level accomplishment, bringing in new people. But a lot of these people, because they're so new, don't understand, hey, people are going to vote against things that you don't like. People are going to vote against things that you like. It's going to happen. This politics. You align with people who have a similar agenda, and you know that you're going to lose on some issues, you're going to win on some issues. It's a lot like being in a family. It's a lot like being in a marriage or any kind of other adult relationship. You win some and you lose some, and ideally you have shared values and you head down the path together in the right direction. And people, of course, aren't apologizing. I keep waiting for that. They go, oh, well, he'll do something bad. It's like, well, okay, so if McCarthy does do something bad, then Trump endorsed him. Whoa, whoa, but Trump had to endorse him. So Trump is the one, I'm zeroing in on the central issue here. You cannot criticize Trump. You cannot criticize him. If you criticize him, you're never Trumper. Meanwhile, it's like, where were you guys in 2015? I can show, everybody knows where I was in 2015 and 2016, at least anybody who's around there. But you can bash people like McCarthy, who are overwhelmingly spectacular, but you can't criticize Trump at all. And that's unfortunate. That's where we are right now, is there's a huge cult of personality around him, and there's really nothing that can change. Even after January 6th, people still want to go march into another protest, and they're going to be mad at you if you say that I don't think that's a good idea.
Right. So, okay, so let me ask you about the events of the weekend when Trump truth bombed that he thinks he's going to get arrested on Tuesday. First of all, do you think that's true? Do you think he'll get arrested at all? Do you think specifically it'll be Tuesday? Do you think, as Elon Musk does, that he will be reelected in a landslide? I'll tell you my take. My take is it makes it more likely he will win a primary and less likely he will win a general. I think that's been how the left has played this ever since he left office, is basically assure that Trump will be the nominee and then assure that he will lose a general, because if Trump is the nominee, then that gets all the anti-Trump vote out. And so then they don't even have to worry about a pro-Biden vote or whatever, because Trump's the nominee. That always feels like that's been the tactic for me. It seems like that's what's playing out. But then again, you know, Musk is a smart guy and he's a provocateur, but he's saying Trump will win. What's your thought?
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. Trump wins the primary in such a landslide. I would hope DeSantis, who I'm quite fond of, wouldn't even bother running, because all he's going to do is get a bloody nose over nothing. Trump is going to win the primary, and then the Democrats are going to come out to vote. If they see Trump as getting scalped, they're going to love it. There'll be bloodlust, and there will be a get-out-the-vote effort for the Democrats that we haven't seen. So keep in mind, if you look at the Florida election, and if you look at even some of the midterm elections in 2022, the Democrats did not come out to vote. The Republicans won, although by a narrow majority, the popular vote. Democrats aren't high propensity voters necessarily, except when Trump's on the ballot. And that's why people go, well, how did Joe Biden get more votes than Obama? Because people hate Trump that much. I'm sorry. If you don't know anyone who hates Trump, then I would encourage you to please get out of whatever your bubble are in. Because when Trump is in office, I've returned the favor to people now. So whenever Biden does something really bad, I tell people they have to apologize for that. And I go, well, I didn't vote for Biden because I support defunding the police. And I go, well, man, every time Trump says something, my tax would, did you see this? Well, can you believe what Trump did now? So I try to understand. I try to be empathetic. I don't understand why people don't get it. Trump is the most hated president in our lifetime by far. And if you don't know people who hate him, then maybe you have bad social skills and people are afraid to tell you. because they think you'll get angry or something at them. But that's what will happen in 2024. And there'll be a record turnout of people who can't wait to dance on that guy's grave. And it will be major Democrat get out the vote. We'll probably lose the House. And the Senate is supposed to be a better map for the Republicans in 2024. We might lose the Senate, too. It'll be a complete blowout.
It's just hard to find the holes in that. And I say this as someone who's pretty agnostic on the primary so far. And I'll tell you why. And this is something that was noteworthy, that you were one of the first out of the gate yesterday to, or over the weekend, to suggest that Ron DeSantis should have made a statement saying noting what a witch hunt it is against Trump. I think Ron DeSantis is such an amazing governor. It's almost mind blowing. He's been a pretty terrible presidential candidate so far, and he's part of his not declaring. I'm kind of with you in the sense that he's not putting up a big fight. I don't get the logic of why he's waiting so long. I don't get why he's not weighing in some of these big battles. I don't know why any of the candidates let Trump get to East Palestine first. That's just concession layups being offered to the guy who's already ahead. It just seems like no one's really running effectively, but DeSantis is the only guy with a shot, and he's not even in. As someone who likes DeSantis and wants him to run and win, or at least wanted him to run previously and win, do you have a sense of why he's not engaging in some of these things?
Yeah, his advisors are really good. He has the best media and comm shop anywhere. I wish that Trump had his comm shop, where they don't even talk to the fake news media. They just say, well, when you correct your fake news here, then you can try to get an interview with us and maybe we'll take it. They really understand the game. But I read something interesting from some pro-DeSantis accounts, and they couldn't be more wrong. They said DeSantis is running on policy. And Trump proved – it's like people from both Trump and DeSantis don't learn the lessons of history, which is Trump proved in the 2015-2016 election – that running on wonky policy points, which, by the way, I like policy. My biggest criticism of Trump and this frustration was that he took no interest in enacting policy and learning where the levers are, and that he didn't try to understand the bureaucracy, you know, surround himself with people he did. So I'm fully on board with DeSantis actually understands how to use political power and how to govern. And I love that about him, but that's not how you win a national election. So I'm beating my head at the table when I read his advisors say things like, no, he's not going to get involved in this sideshow. A Bolshevik is trying to imprison someone who crime, if it is even that, is exactly the same as Hillary Clinton's with the Perkins Coie dossier. So if you want to talk about like what's bad, well, it's bad that Trump allegedly had an affair, and it's bad that he had to pay someone an extortion. That's bad. That's alleged extortion. That's bad. Somebody had that situation arise with David Letterman, and the person who went to David Letterman and said, pay me money or I'm going to go to the press, that person actually went to prison for extortion in the David Letterman case. So it's bad. But the Steele dossier funding and the misuse of campaign funds, which, by the way, is not alleged in the case of Hillary Clinton, this was established by the Federal Election Commission. There's been no interest in prosecuting Clinton at all. So if you think that you want to talk about policy, well, then let's talk about the policy of Soros DAs letting anti-Semitic attacks run wild. How many videos do we have to see, right? How many videos do we have to see? So if they want to think, and this happens with a lot of people, the Republicans, you know this, man. You see these people. And I'm not saying this is all DeSantis people specifically, but a lot of these people think, oh, they're so smart, and you're such a little policy wonk, and oh, you're such a little nerd. Oh, aren't you so cool? Okay, nerds. Talk to me about selective prosecution doctrine. Talk to me about how Hillary Clinton isn't going to be indicted, but Trump is. You don't think that's a policy issue? Talk to me about how January 6th people are being wrongfully imprisoned, but that the Kavanaugh protesters aren't. In fact, Kavanaugh's right. Being stalked at his home every night. Someone was trying to kill Kavanaugh. Let's talk about a judge being threatened in Stanford. So if you want to pretend like you're some kind of nerd with a bow tie who understands policy, unlike us, filthy, unwashed animals who voted for Trump in 2016, then let's talk about the Bolshevik policy being ushered in by Soros DAs. But of course, they don't understand that at all. So yeah, DeSantis' team is making a huge mistake here because they just have to take the high-minded position of what I said, right? I speak all the languages. I speak the language of working class. I speak the language of the nerds that are wannabe nerds, which is great. The policy, as I tweeted out, and you mentioned, I'm talking about policy. I'm talking about the policy of denial of equal protection under the law. I'm talking about the policy of the Bolsheviks trying to make it so that if you're a law-abiding citizen, you have more to fear from the government than you do if you're a violent criminal. These are all policy issues, and this is all the stuff that happened in the early Marxist revolution in Russia, China, Cambodia, and other countries. So I'm tired of hearing that he's so high-minded and it's a policy thing. Yeah, there's a lot of policy at work here, and DeSantis needs to get in front of it.
I think you're right on this, and I just am curious why they're so committed to this strategy. It just seems like the missing political moments has just been a curse for this country. I think so many talented politicians have done that, and it might have already happened with DeSantis. It might be over. It might already be too late, which is, I think, kind of stunning, because maybe he is the guy that could reset things, because it certainly doesn't feel like anyone else is emerging in that vein. Mike, I want to cover a couple other things in the time that we have. Give me a sense from your vantage point. What do you think people who are frustrated right now with the process, they see what Soros is doing, they see what these DAs are doing, and they don't have an outlet. They don't have, we're not going to vote anytime soon. You know, what are people supposed to do, especially if we watch Donald Trump get literally arrested this week? What do you recommend to people? Do you have a recommendation?
Yeah, they're criminals in Republican districts. And this is something that people want to hear. They don't want to talk about. If this is the rule, then there's a great book called The Evolution of Cooperation. It's been shown that the only way that humans can, with this with diversity and humans with disagreement, can cooperate together is tit-for-tat strategy. So the number one thing that has to happen is Republican, and they're not going to do this, and maybe they finally will, then start indicting Democrats who commit these kind of offenses that Trump is doing. And of course, Republicans will say, we're going to take the high ground, we're better than that. Then what are you going to do? Sit and cry all day. That's what you have to do. If the rule is that what Trump did is a crime, and I don't think it is, but if that's the rule, then Republicans and red areas need to start treating Democrats under the same standards. Again, so the DeSantis people listening, you're all high-minded, policy. Okay, that's the policy then. The policy is that if you're so smart, you understand that the only way that people with disagreements can cooperate is that if one person hits you, you retaliate. It's called tit for tat. It's been shown in every game theory simulation, from computers to complex political problems. You have to have your own DAs and your own attorney generals retaliate. That's where the emphasis needs to be, is, well, why aren't we indicting Democrats for their crimes? And then when people say such nonsense like, well, we don't do that, you say, well, that's stupid. You don't understand anything. You don't understand basic political game theory. You don't understand anything about anything, and you're an idiot, and you need to start doing what the Soros DAs are doing.
Mike, last one for today. And again, I want to plug your Substack. Make sure people go over there, MikeCernovich.substack.com. He's on all the social media platforms as well. Really good Instagram, @Cernovich on Twitter. The one thing that when I'm following your accounts, I'm always reminded when I miss my workout. Why are you on such a big kick to make sure people are exercising?
I want people to live better lives. Yeah. If you look at what I speak for politically, if you look at what I before lifestyle, if you think about the parenting things that I write about and talk about, and this is why I have a lot of people read me, even though I can be a little caustic and I'm not really interested in pandering to people. If you read me long enough, you know that I fundamentally want humanity to evolve to a higher level, and I fundamentally want people to live better lives. And there's a lot of things that people aren't doing that they could that would be a lot better for them and their family and their home lives and politics too. So I do mention a lot of parenting. I do mention peaceful parenting, Socratic parenting, talking to your kids. Hey, how about you learn to win an argument with your kid? It doesn't go to, well, my house, my rules, right? Big tough guy. How about you try to win the debate at home with a kid using dialogue, explaining things, saying, oh, why do you think that? Oh, you want to do this? What if, like, for example, my kids climb on things that they shouldn't, I don't go, get off of that. My kid is climbing, I'm looking at it right now, it's some kind of chalkboard, and I saw her, and I said, hey, so do you feel that? Yeah. Is it wobbly? Yeah. Well, what's going to happen if you fall off that? Oh, I'll get hurt. okay, so do you want to plot on that? And they 9 out of 10 times say, actually, no, that's not a very prudent thing to do. So that's mainly what people need to focus on is why don't you try to be a little more Socratic, a little more dialogue, a little more rational based with your family and not some ghoul just yelling at your kids all day. And then why don't you take care of your health and be a little bit healthier, and then you're more robust and better able to handle the inevitable stresses of life, political and real.
Yeah, it's also a great thing for moods, great thing for mentality, things, great thing for confidence, and it is a way underemphasized in society. So I'm glad you're doing it, and I appreciate it, and it has an effect because I know a lot of people who are miss their workout that day. You're shaming them into behaving better, which I dig.
So trying to use positive reinforcement, and also reminding people this is where people lose the plot a lot of times is, you know, no one's saying go enter a bodybuilding contest or whatever. Nobody's saying that. You don't have to do that. It isn't all or nothing, and there's a lot of all or nothing thinking that happens in politics too. It's over now. The Fed's in abyss. Oh, it's never over, man. That's the number one message I try to share with people, with all this doomsday despair stuff. The world is gonna go on, and whether you like it or not, it's gonna go on without all of us. So the game is never really over, and people have to focus on the day-to-day and not get caught up in believing that life is a story where there's either an immediate happy ending or a sad ending. You got every day struggle. Every day you got to push forward.
Mike Cernovich, really appreciate all the time, and I hope you come back soon.
My pleasure, brother. Thank you.
I'm American made.
That's today's show. Thanks so much to producer Zach for putting it together. Robert Marlowe, who helps me pick topics. Happy birthday to Wynn Marlowe, my mother, and always worthy of a shout out. And all of you who tell people about the show, can't thank you enough. And we'll catch you next time.
I'm a lover, and I won't apologize.